I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em.
When the world's greatest athlete, Michael Jordan, teams up with the world's best-loved cartoon character, Bugs Bunny, you won't believe your eyes.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
You heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team.
Ready?
Yeah!
Done.
Yeah.
You kick it in gear.
You go to the hole and dominate.
We own defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I don't play defense.
Warner Brothers presents Jordan.
Bucks.
Bunny.
Special delivery.
Together, they just might save the world. Space Jam. You've never seen anything like it.
Hello and welcome to the second Tooncast MYR crossover episode, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. This will be episode 27 for Tooncast. It will be episode 20.5 for MYR. I am your host, TFU and Mike, and today I am joined once again by Professor Boss K Dog Thompson. Kevin, hello.
How's it going?
It's going. And as I said before, Boy, I gotta delete that, don't I? We'll be talking about the animation live-action crossover of the NBA and Looney Tunes called Space Jam. So, and we are... We've already really gone through general chats, so I think we can just kind of... we'll go into the history lesson once we hear the trailer, so we will be right back.
Let's all laugh at the duck.
And that point guard, standing 3'3", 4 feet if you include the ears, co-captain of the Toon Squad, Doctor of Delight. player coach of the Toon Squad. At 6'6" from North Carolina, his royal fairness, Michael Jordan.
Who?
The challengers for the ultimate game, all the way from Moron Mountain, from
It's time for the history lesson. Take it away.
All right. Space Jam is a 1996 American live-action / animated film, hence why we're doing a crossover episode here, starring Michael Jordan, Bugs Bunny, voiced by Billy West, Daffy Duck, and the rest of the Looney Tunes characters. It also features the debut of newcomer Lola Bunny, who is voiced by Kath Soucie. It was produced by Ivan Reitman and directed by Joe Pitka, the live-action parts. Yeah. Tony Savone and Bruce W. Smith, as far as the animation goes. The film was released theatrically by Warner Brothers Family Entertainment on November 15th, 1996, which makes it, well, how many years ago? That was about 13 years ago, almost to the day. The film was, interestingly, also converted into a pinball game by Sega and a video game by the masters at Acclaim Entertainment. And that does it. Let's move on.
Yes. General memories for this one. This isn't...
I do remember the advertisements for this and the hype for it. It was... This film was hyped up quite a bit.
Yeah, it was.
Which makes sense. I mean, it was, you know, in the heyday of, you know, Michael Jordan and everything that was going on then, and if you can combine that with, you know, the cartoon aspect, I mean... It, and the people that they were bringing in for the music. I mean, you had to be living in a cave in 1996 if you didn't hear about this movie.
Oh, yes. Very, very much so.
I remember the ad campaign. I remember the soundtrack and the music a lot. I think I've seen... I'm going to sound like a douche for doing this episode, but I think I've seen bits and pieces of it here and there, but I know for a fact I've never seen it from beginning to end. So I'm equal.
See, you have to see it from beginning to end, regardless of maybe, you know, people not liking it now, but back then, everybody, I don't care who you are, you could be a 90-year-old woman, or man, or whatever, you know, a 2,000-year-old vampire or something, I don't know, everybody wanted to see Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny team up, everybody wanted to back in 1996. You know, outside, and this is going to be very controversial, but outside of Jerry Maguire, this was the most famous movie that year. And silence. What?
Could be close. I'd have to look stuff up, but...
Well, yeah, but I mean, alright, well, Jerry Maguire was very, very popular when it came out. It still is now, obviously. I mean, everybody still quotes it. But you know what I mean? That was one of the high-grossing films, just not even gross, just one of the most popular films in 1996. And this was, I think, another one that could, you know, pretty much tie it. You not really tie it, but I mean, you know, I mean, the buzz for this movie was so great. I remember watching this. I don't think I saw it in theaters. I think I saw it either on TV or. DVD, VHS. I don't think the DVD market had fully hit yet. I think it was still VHS and, ooh, DVD is this new thing. So I think I saw it on VHS at first. I'm not really sure. Just an overall great, great film, I think, for what it is. Is it...
You can't really go wrong combining celebrity sports stars and the cartoon characters for kids.
No, you really can't. And actually, it's funny. This episode of Tooncast and MWire will air not this coming Wednesday, but the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. The Tooncast episode 26, which is a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving, will air on Thanksgiving, and that will be this week's episode of Tooncast. It'll also be this week's episode of MWire, or not MWire, we're doing something else for that. Anyway, but this episode will air the Wednesday after Thanksgiving. I'm going to actually, I got the starting lineups for part of the intro.
Nice.
Yeah, I got that for part of the intro. I also have the trailer. And for the outro is basically pretty much the entire end of the film from when Michael and Stan Podolak go back to the gym and they see all the other NBA stars, you know, Charles Barkley, Sean Bradley, all of them. So that'll be the outro. I guess we can go into the cast here. Michael Jordan plays himself as the protagonist of the film. He is a professional basketball player who retires from the National Basketball Association. To pursue a career in baseball, he is pulled into the world of Looney Tunes and is persuaded into playing basketball with them. Despite his insistence that he only plays baseball now. Brandon Hammond portrays the young Michael Jordan. I know I did get some audio from here, but I want to see if I have... Crap. I do have this.
Eh, we'll fix your timing. Look at our facilities. We've got hoops. We got weights.
We've got balls. Whoa!
Sure do. This place is a mess.
Mess? You're worried about a little mess? There's nothing here a little spit shine wouldn't fix. Spit shine! Lemony fresh.
You guys are nuts.
Yes. Wayne Knight. Newman is in this film. Of course, if you're a Seinfeld fan, you'll know who Newman is. Plays Stan Podolak, the publicist of Michael Jordan and his family. He later joins Michael and the team to play against the Monstars. Billy West, who most people will know as Fry from Futurama, plays Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. And, you know, really, we don't have to go into the character descriptions of Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. Everybody knows who Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd are. D. Bradley Baker. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
D. Bradley Baker provides the voices of Daffy Duck and the Tasmanian Devil. He also... is the bull that does the that attacks the Monstar pound during the game. Teresa Randall is cast as Juanita Jordan, Michael Jordan's wife. Danny DeVito provides the voice of Mr. Swackhammer. What the hell kind of a name is Swackhammer?
That's an awesome name.
Oh my god. The main antagonist of the film, he is the proprietor of the theme park Moron Mountain, for which he seeks new attractions. He acts as the coach of the Monstars, who double as his minions. Later, after the game, his own Monstars team turns on him, compacts him into a rocket, and sends him flying out of the basketball stadium and straight to the moon. Let's see. Manor Washington as Jeffrey Jordan, Michael Jordan's oldest son. Bob Bergen provides the voices of Hubie and Birdie. I love those guys. Hubie and Birdie are a pair of mice who act as the commentators of the game. Marvin the Martian, Porky Pig, Tweety, and that's it. Hubie and Birdie, I remember them the most from... what's it called? What is it? It's house hunting or mice. I don't know. It's some cartoon where they end up in the House of Tomorrow, and they end up getting chased by these automated broomsticks, and it's just so funny. And I love those two guys. Eric Gordon as Marcus Jordan, Michael Jordan's youngest son. Penny Bay Bridges as Jasmine Jordan, Michael Jordan's daughter. Bill Farmer provides the voices of Sylvester, Yosemite Sam, and Foghorn Leghorn. And as far as Foghorn...
Did you order original recipe or extra crispy?
June Foray provides the voice of Granny. Kath Soucy provides the voice of Lola Bunny, a female rabbit who plays for the Looney Tunes team. She is Bugs Bunny's love interest and later becomes his girlfriend. And even though we haven't had a chance to interview him, I'm going to be messaging this person on Facebook at some point. Maurice LaMarche provides the voice of Pepe Le Pew, a French-accented skunk who plays for the Looney Tunes team. Larry Bird plays himself, Bill Murray plays himself, and Tom Barry plays James Jordan, Michael Jordan's father. I've seen Tom Barry in plenty of other things. I actually have seen him in an episode of Beyond Belief. I believe he was also one of the FBI agents in the Fast and the Furious films.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yes, Charles Barkley, Patrick, yeah, I know, I'm always right. Charles Barkley.
No,
shut up. Charles Barkley, Patrick Ewing, Muggsy Bogues, Larry Johnson, Sean Bradley, Ahmad Rashad, Del Harris, Vlad Divac, Cedric Sabalos, Jim Rome, Paul Westfall, and Danny Ainge appear as themselves in the film. Bibi Drake appears as a housekeeper for Michael Jordan. The voices of the Nerdlux are provided by Jocelyn Blue, Charity James, June Melby, Catherine Reitman, and Colleen Wainwright. The voices of the Monstars are provided by Darnell Suttles, Steve Kayla, Joey Kamen, and Dorian Harewood. I know him from some stuff. He was in. He played a couple of roles in Spider-Man, the 1994 Spider-Man. T.K. Carter, and it's very funny. Homer Simpson, along with Patricia Heaton, make a cameo appearance as couple that the Nerdlux in disguise sit next to at the basketball game. Yes, that's right. Dan Castellaneta and Patricia Heaton are in this. Which I didn't know that at first. I did not, because I had never really seen, even when I first saw this film, but even now, like when I would watch it, because I have the two-disc special edition DVD now, but until I read that somewhere, I did not know that the guy was Dan Castellaneta. I did not know it was Homer Simpson, because I don't think at the time I had ever seen who the person was that played Homer. Overall, just a great cast. I don't think you could have gotten anyone different to do the same. And again, a lot of these people, the majority of them, are playing themselves. I mean, you know, it's basically an everyday thing for them. It's basically just putting them into a Looney Tunes movie.
Yeah, but even for the ones that are strictly voices, I mean, that's, you know, just like we said with a lot of our other shows, the who's who of voice actors, with June Foray, Kat Soucy, you know, Maurice LaMarche.
Yep.
D. Bradley Baker, Billy West. I mean, that's a good list.
And the other thing is, a lot of these people, like Bill Farmer, D. Bradley Baker, and Billy West, they are picking up roles that, you know, were the one man, you know, the man behind a thousand voices. And, you know, while you want to give your own spin on it, you also want to keep it true to the character. You want, you know, I don't think anybody else could have fulfilled that like they did in this film. Do you remember enough of the film to pick a favorite character, whether it's live action or animated?
Oh yeah, it's my favorite character in all of the Tim stuff. I cheat here, but it's Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
You gotta love Bugs Bunny. I mean, regardless of, you know, what, regardless of the cartoon itself, if you're watching it, or like this show, this movie, or whatever you watch that Bugs Bunny is in, Bugs Bunny just
really Oh, yeah.
He's just too cool. I mean, you could like other side characters, but if you say you don't like Bugs Bunny, you're just saying that because you don't want to be like everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I like all the Looney Tunes for the most part, with the exception of maybe Porky sometimes. Porky kind of gets on my nerves, but yeah, I would have to say Bugs is my favorite. Of course, he is also the other protagonist in the film. I did like the miniature versions of the Monstars, the little aliens. They were kind of cool. I think I actually have one of them when they're in the ship going into the Looney Tunes thing. And then here is the Bugs meets the aliens.
I'll be with you in a second, folks, after I finish with Nature Boy here.
All right, you pesky wabbit. I've got you now. Out.
One small step for moi.
One giant leap for Moron Mountain.
And one whop a headache for Elmer Fudd. Diminutive, ain't they?
We seek the one they call Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, Bugs Bunny.
Have you seen him?
Where is this guy?
Is he around?
Bugs Bunny. Bugs Bunny. Say, does he have a great big long ears? Like this?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And does he hop around? Like this?
Yeah.
Well, does he say, what's up, Doc? Like this? What's up, Doc?
Yeah!
Nope. Never heard of him. You know, maybe there is no intelligent life out there in the universe after all.
Hold on there, Mr. Looney Tune. Hey, what do you think we are, stupid?
Don't move a muscle.
Okay, Bunny, gather up your tune pals. We're taking you for a ride.
Totally, all right. So, like, where are we going? Are we there yet?
Yes, very good. Going into the behind-the-scenes segment, Joe Pitka directed it. Leo Buonavuti, I don't know. Timothy Harris, Herschel Weingrod were writers. I don't know. Do we want to actually go through the entire plot? basically, in the summer of 1973, a young Michael Jordan plays basketball outside his home, telling his father that he wants to one day go to college and play in the NBA. Fast forwarding 20 years, and Michael Jordan has not only fulfilled his dream of playing college and professional basketball, but has become a bona fide NBA superstar. After winning his third championship with the Chicago Bulls, Jordan announces his retirement from basketball and declares his intention to play baseball. Signed to the minor league Birmingham Barons, Jordan is a major draw for the team, but only a fair to mediocre player. Basically, to sum this film up, Michael Jordan is enlisted by the Looney Tunes to help them defeat the Monstars from Moron Mountain in the ultimate game of basketball. There are a lot of funny scenes, like when Bugs and Daffy have to go to his house to get his basketball gear.
And basically the reason that they're enlisting Michael Jordan is because the Monstars have basically taken over, stolen talent from the other NBA players that we've talked about before, Charles Barkley, Penny Ewing, etc. So the Looney Tunes turn to Michael Jordan as their savior.
Yes, and I like how it's funny, he is golfing with Bill Murray and Larry Bird. Larry, I am a huge fan of Larry Bird. You know, me being originally from Boston, you know, it was always, back in the late 80s, or mid to late 80s, it was always Jordan versus Bird. It always was that way. regardless. And, yeah. I mean, the hell, that Tiger Electronics even haven't had a video game, Jordan versus Bird. a lot of product placement in this film, especially in, like, one or two lines that Wayne Knight says when he goes to Michael's hotel. He's like, lace up your Nikes, grab your Wheaties, and we'll pick up a Big Mac on the bus. I don't know, he says just all these product things that Michael Jordan has and does endorse.
Endorse.
Yeah, which, you know, I don't really mind it. You know, it makes for a comic relief thing, really. Yep.
Yeah, it's just funny. But basically, that all boils down to the big basketball game between, you know, the Looney Tunes stars with Michael Jordan and against the Monstars and their NBA talent stolenness.
Yes. If the Monstars win, Swaghammer gets Jordan along with the Looney Tunes. As the game resumes, Swaghammer tells the Monstars to crush them, which they do, literally. Throughout the second part of the second half, they brutally foul and injure almost every player on the Toon Squad until only Jordan, Bugs, Lola, Daffy, and Stan are left standing. Stan is literally flattened by the Monstars, but manages to bring the Toon Squad within 1 point of the Monstars with 10 seconds remaining. Marvin the Martian, the referee, warns the Toon Squad that if they cannot find a fifth player, soon they will have to forfeit the game. Enter Peter Venkman. That's right, Bill Murray, who has somehow made his way to Looney Tune Land, suddenly makes the scene to offer assistance, and the game continues. The Toon Squad manages to steal the ball and pass it to Jordan. He makes a leap to the basket from half court, is snagged in midair by two Monstars. Exploiting the unique physics of Looney Tune Land, Jordan stretches his arm towards the basket as his body is restrained, causing his arm to grow almost 16 feet long. He drops the ball into the basket just as the clock runs out. With that, the Toon Squad wins the game and their freedom. Of course, you know, Swaghammer being the villain that he is, he berates the Monstars, and they, you know, Michael asks them, why do you listen to this guy? Because he's bigger than we used to be. At that moment, the Monstars finally realize that they are physically bigger than Swaghammer is and turn on him. And of course, you really can't get away with this film without seeing them reenact Looney Tunes scenes themselves, little Monstars, once they give the talent back into the basketball, which I thought was a very good scene. Jordan and Stan then find his still talentless NBA friends. Oh, okay, well, to back up a little bit, the aliens, Stan, having recovered from his injury, reminds Jordan of his baseball game. After saying goodbye to the Toons, the two of them borrow the aliens' spaceship to return to the real world for Jordan to join the Barons at the home stadium, to the amazement of Jordan's family and fans. Jordan and Stan then find still talentless NBA friends moping around in a gym. Jordan takes the ultimate games ball filled with the superstar's talent and tells them to just touch it. They hesitate at first, but eventually do and receive their skills back. After showing their newly regained skills off to each other, Jordan's rivals begin to tease him, saying that he doesn't have the skills to play basketball anymore. This motivates Jordan to later return to the NBA, mirroring his real-life comeback.
So now we know why.
I think it was going to happen regardless. You know, he's retired, what, two or three times besides this one? Yeah, but I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, really, I did not pay attention to basketball a lot back in the 90s. You know, my Celtics were gone, you know, pretty much. You know, I did like the Phoenix Suns for a little while, only because Danny Ainge was actually playing on their team, and he used to be a Celtic, but... you know, once the Bulls pretty much reached their pinnacle of getting those three championships, you know, I can understand him wanting to move on and do something else, but, you know, then again, you know, fan demand, pretty much. And, you know, he came back, he left again, came, you know. I think after the third time, people got tired of it and just said, you know, decide already. What do you want to do? I mean, the first time, you know, honestly, that entire end of the movie, I, you know, I'll be a man and admit it, I shed a few tears. Because I know what's going to happen, obviously. I know he's going to make a comeback, and I thought that, you know, I thought that was really, really cool. Moving into the music segment here, the original music was done by James Newton Howard. Space Jam, the original soundtrack album of the 1996 film of the same name, starring Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes cast. An album featuring the film's score by James Newton Howard was also released. The soundtrack was released by Atlantic Records on November 12, 1996. The soundtrack earned mostly good reviews and was successful on the Billboard 200, peaking at number 2. The soundtrack also managed to sell very well. It was certified double platinum less than 2 months after its release in January 1997. In 2001, the soundtrack was certified 6 times platinum. And, you know, you have artists on here like Seal, Coolio, Quad City DJs, R. Kelly. The Monstars anthem was performed by B-Real, Cypress Hill, Coolio, Method Man, L, Cool J, and Busta Rhymes. You got D'Angelo on here, Monica, Salt-N-Pepa, Robin S. You know, just a bunch of people that were popular then, back in the 90s. And of course,
I just remember the soundtrack. Yeah. That's fun. I remember, you know, from Fly Like an Eagle to the Space Jam song to I Believe I Can Fly. I mean, this was just it was just a fun soundtrack. I mean, it wasn't like something
right.
super serious or, you know, fantastic music, but it was just something that right. was entertaining
oh, yeah.
and was fun.
And then, of course, the very last track is Buggin', performed by Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and Elmer Fudd, which is basically Billy West and D. Bradley Baker going back and forth.
Right.
Just, you know, as you said, overall, you know, just a really good, fun soundtrack. There was another release on January 28th of 97. A second version of the soundtrack featuring the scores of the film was released, which I don't think it combined both of them. I think it was just a separate, you know, you'll have the soundtrack and then the score. I think that's what it was.
Right.
As far as the legacy segment, for reception, Space Jam received mixed reviews. According to Rotten Tomatoes, only 37% of critics and 46% of their selected top critics gave the film a positive review. Roger Ebert gave Space Jam subdued. Both are subdued. Shit.
Hold on, Roger Ebert gave him enthusiastic thumbs up. Which Dean Siskel also gave the film, although his zeal.
Oh, okay. It's cut off.
And then Leonard Maltin also gave the film.
Right. Some critics compared it unfavorably to Who Framed Roger Rabbit, a popular film in which cartoon characters and live-action humans coexisted. The soundtrack sold enough out, huh?
That's
yeah, kind of is. The soundtrack sold enough albums to be certified 6 times platinum and also served as high point for the musical artist R. Kelly, whose song I Believe I Can Fly became a hit after it was featured on the film's soundtrack. We've talked about that already. The actual worldwide gross box office was $230,418,342. According to Jerry Beck's The Animated Movie Guide, Space Jam's tremendous box office success was not enough to cover the major financial loss of Mars Attacks. A result is many cutbacks ordered by Ted Turner throughout the studio, including the animation department, which led to the end of the new cartoon shorts being produced and directed by Chuck Jones. Damn.
Ooh,
yes. And for awards and nominations, 1997 and 98 ASCAP Film and Television Music Awards. It won for most performed songs from motion pictures. And it won for top box office films. It won for the Annie Awards Best Individual Achievement, Technical Achievement. It was nominated for several other awards. It won a Grammy for Best Song, written specifically for a motion picture or for television, by R. Kelly for the song I Believe I Can Fly. It was nominated for MTV Movie Award, and it was nominated for a Satellite Award. It won a World Animation Celebration Award, Best Use of Animation in Motion Picture Trailer. And it also was nominated for a Young Artist Award. Okay, yeah. You've added the trivia, so you can talk about the trivia.
All right. Starting off, the scuffed basketball used in the film is a treasured souvenir owned by director Joe Picca. When held by Michael Jordan, it is real. But whenever it is in flight or controlled by the cartoon characters, it is animated. When flying towards Moran Mountain, the monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey can be seen at the very right edge of the frame floating in space. In order to fill up the audience from a limited selection of characters, one section was made from actual Looney Tunes. The rest were simply replicated over and over and then seated next to each other to create the illusion of the full audience. A couple other ones here. We got the gym where the Looney Tunes practice is called Leon Schlesinger Gym, after the man who produced the first Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies. Mel Blanc's son, was originally booked to provide all of the regular Warner Brothers male cartoon character voices, but he and Warner Brothers couldn't agree on a contract, so the studio replaced Blanc with four other people to do the 12 male voices instead of Noel doing all of them. So apparently Noel could do just as much.
Oh, right. Well, if you... I mean, I know you've been out of touch for a little while as far as the internet goes, but if you go back and listen to the 20th episode where we talked about Looney Tunes, I played a clip in that where Noel and Mel are actually going back and forth with the voices, because it said on one of the specials on the DVDs of Looney Tunes that Mel trained Noel to do those voices.
Okay.
Yes.
Very cool. A picture of Bosco, Warner Brothers' first cartoon star, can be seen hanging on the wall of the meeting hall in the scene where Yosemite Sam confronts the alien. So you have a lot of, what do you want to call it, homages to old Looney Tunes stuff. The hat that Bill Murray is wearing at the Bulls game at the end of the movie is the St. Paul Saints, the minor league baseball team of which Murray is part owner. And let's see, the film marks the debut of Lola Bunny, as we talked about before. To keep Michael Jordan happy while filming, Warner Brothers built him his own basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
That probably didn't help in the whole saving money so that they didn't have to cut the studio later. Bill Murray's, apparently it's his least favorite film that he's in. I don't know why. After Daffy suggests naming the team the Ducks, Bugs asks, what kind of Mickey Mouse organization would name their team the Ducks? And, of course, this actually happened in 1993 when the Anaheim Ducks of the National Hockey League were established.
Wait a second. First of all, I always took that as a joke about the Mighty Ducks films. Because the Mighty Ducks films came out way before Anaheim even picked up a hockey team.
I think that was a direct joke. I think that's kind of worded wrong, but I think that was them making fun of Disney. And then the last trivia one, when Stanley comes into Michael's hotel room and says, come on, Michael, this is what we were talking about before, it's game time, flip on your Hanes, lace up your Nikes, take your Wheaties and your Gatorade, and we'll grab a Big Mac on the way to the ballpark. So those are all the things that Michael Jordan obviously was endorsing or had endorsed before. And just a couple goofs that you can, if you're a real big fan of the movie and you want to freeze frame it or look for things that most people don't see, when Stan falls in the Birmingham Barons dugout, you can clearly see the mat that he falls on, so you can look for that. When Tweety is surrounded by the Monstars and he fights them off with karate, the timer is visible in the background, set at 12 o'clock. Before the scene, the timer was at, or 12 minutes, was set at 5 minutes and 1 second. So you see that. After Wile E. Coyote crashes into the auditorium, Daffy steps on his nose, and on the very next shot, Daffy is walking in the aisle, but Wile E. is not visible behind him, so he apparently disappeared. A couple more clock things. When the talent is stolen from Patrick Ewing, the first clock shows 6 minutes and 7 seconds left, but when the camera pans the other way and he goes to the free throw line, the clock now has 6 minutes and 13 seconds left. After the aliens steal Patrick Ewing's talent, the referee throws the ball to him for a free throw. The ball hits Ewing in the chest. When Michael is watching TV and sees the replay of the incident, the ball hits Ewing in the forehead.
Well, actually, I don't think that was a mix-up. The reason why I say that is because when I was watching it earlier, Ewing is at the free throw line for two shots. So, exactly. He goes up for the first shot and he wildly misses. The referee throws it back to him and it hits him in the chest. He goes up for the second shot and it's just a giant, giant air ball. The referee throws it back in and it does hit him in the head. So it's not really a continuity goof. Okay. Of course, again, it's IMDb. So as far as factual errors, many of the monsters jump and slam from beyond the three-point line, but everyone is only counted as 2 points, which I find kind of weird. Now, maybe if we have any true diehard basketball fans that are listening, maybe they can tell us, isn't it if you just shoot beyond the three-point line or right at the three-point line that it ends up being a three-pointer? I seriously doubt that in regulation... not even that. I mean, if you could, that's more than fine. But, I always thought you had to be standing beyond or either right at or beyond the three-point line to get a three-point shot. If you jump from that line and you're actually jumping into two-point territory, it would still count as 2 points because you're not where you're supposed to be for a three-pointer. I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, go ahead. Go ahead with the next one.
Yeah. Okay, you also have the scene where Daffy Duck is strutting down the runway showing off his many different books. His basketball sneakers are shaped like regular sneakers at the toe, but in the next shot, you can see that he has now regained his webbed foot. During the scene in Madison Square Garden, the court goes from having only the professional three-point line and an orange lane. Later on in the scene, though, there are 2 three-point lines, the college and the professional one, and then the lane has changed from red to blue. So, some court issues there. And then, last one I have is when Fan is inflated out of his pancake state and flies past the scoreboard, the Toon Squad score is shown as 67, and then seconds later, their score is shown as 76. So, a couple things to look for when you watch the film.
So I think we are going to take a break. We're going to come back with some final thoughts. Probably going to put some ads in between the break here. So we will be right back, and I will leave you with Daffy.
It's gut check time.
There once was a boy, an albino, I'm told, who possessed the power of pen pusher gold. He had many stories, all short and exciting, but nobody knew, and so he began writing. He sat there all summer and skillfully sought to perfectly ponder and polish each plot. The settings were set, all the characters cast, his fingers were flying and flailing so fast, and soon the young man with the snowy complexion quickly concocted the caffeine collection. He smiled, satisfied with his clever creation. Oh, the things that did pour from his imagination. Stories of pirates and future police, of devils and bullies, and a twist press release. Fantasy, mystery, both are included. Comedy, action, no genre excluded. You say to yourself, it's too good to be true, but author Steve Saylor would not lie to you. An audiobook so you don't have to read. And hey, $15 is all that you need.
From the author of the podcast novel Black Shadow, Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, a dynamic audiobook collection of short stories presented by ringtonefeeder.com and stevesaylor.net. Steve presents a genre mashup of multiple stories for your ears.
I have to be on caffeine to write all this.
Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, on sale October 28th, 2009.
So mark this day down so you will not forget. For more information, stevesaylor.net.
Thanksgiving is just 1 week away and Christmas is right around the corner. Are you looking for a gift for family members and friends that is slightly not the average gift? Well, look no further. I am TF2N Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network, and besides podcasting, I am also a published author of poetry. I have 3 books of poetry published and 1 for sale right now. It is The Twists of Faith and Fate. This is an 85-page softcover book. It comes signed and only costs $20 per copy. I have 20 or more copies available. For more details, email me at tfg1podcast@gmail.com.
We are back, and it is now time for our final thoughts. Obviously, if you're a basketball fan, and if you're a Looney Tunes fan, you're going to love this movie. Is it without its flaws? No. I mean, no movie can be perfect. I mean, you know, we can only put, you know, whatever opinions we want to put into it. Is it a bad film? No. It just depends on what kind of film watcher you are.
Yeah, it's entertaining. Mm-hmm. It's entertaining. It's a good movie for a kid to watch. You know, there's nothing really bad in it. And, you know, obviously kids today wouldn't get it as much because they don't understand all the NBA stars. But if you were a kid that liked the NBA in the you know, early 90s, then you should at least have some enjoyment from this film.
Yeah. Films like this are extremely dated. I will not say that they're not.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think that makes it a bad film, though.
No, not necessarily. I mean, it just might be something that kids wouldn't necessarily enjoy as much as people our age would.
Yeah, well, you know, we all can't live in a time warp and be the same age we are every year over and over and over again.
Damn it.
Yeah, you're turning, what, 27?
28 tomorrow, or 2 days ago, or 5 days ago, or however. I don't know when this is airing.
This is actually going to be a week from when we're actually...
I've been 28 for a week.
Yes.
I'm old.
Shut the hell up. You're old. I'm going to be fucking 30 in February. Shut the hell up.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. If you're a fan of these people, if you're a fan of the Looney Tunes, I would say get this film on DVD. I don't actually know if the original single disc DVD is out anywhere. I'm sure you could probably find it in a $5 bin, but I didn't really cover this in the legacy segment. Of course, we didn't really have a legacy segment because this is a Tooncast MWire crossover, and yes, for MWire, I basically just get the information. I don't put it into actual headings. But the two-disc edition DVD has tons of features. Of course, it has the film. It has commentary by Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, and director Joe Pitka. I suggest you listen to the commentary because you can hear the differences between Billy West and Dee Bradley Baker's real voices and how they portray the Looney Tunes. They also talk about, you know, attempting to fill the shoes of Mel Blanc. The one thing I don't like about the commentary is that Joe Pitka, the way they did his, instead of doing a entirely separate commentary track, they had him, like, a door would open and footsteps, and then he would say something, and then footsteps and the door would close. I don't like that. It's the same complaint I have about the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen DVD commentary. But anyway, let's see. There's production notes. The trailer is on here. You have Jammin' with Bugs Bunny and Michael Jordan documentary, which is a making of the film. Hour of new to DVD classic Looney Tunes, Another Froggy Evening, Invasion of the Bunny Snatchers, Night of the Living Duck, The Ducksorcist, or Duckorcist, and Bugs vs. Daffy, Battle of the Music Video Stars. You also have the music videos from the film, Fly Like an Eagle and the Monstars Anthem. You have a Looney Tunes game demo, and it's just a great film to have on DVD. So, what are your final thoughts before we close this out?
Just like I said before, at the time, for what it was, it was a very entertaining film. You had a combination of cool cartoon characters, sports stars, kick butt soundtrack at times. Not so much anymore, but, you know, it was what it was at the time, which was, like you said, you know, and I'd have to look back and see every movie that came out in 1996, but it was one of the probably most popular films of 96,
yeah.
And, you know, it was a great kind of time capsule, I guess, of what was going on, what was popular back then.
Yes. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast and MWire. There are several ways to get in contact with us and leave feedback for the show. First is you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other podcasts there. Second is you can stop by our new forums, predaconempire.com/nexus. The third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. The fourth is you can visit www.earth-2.net. It's a great geek culture website. You can find our threads on their forums in the self-promotion section. The email addresses are gcrntooncast@gmail.com and gcrnmwire@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Oh, those M&M's are leaving a bad taste in my mouth. Be sure to say what show you're leaving the message for and your name. The number is 502-526-5821. You can also follow us on Twitter. The show names there are GCRNToonCast and GCRNMWire. Mine is TFG1Mike, and what is your Twitter, sir? We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and MWire, and wish you'll join us next time. For Tooncast, it will be the first Disney Animation Spotlight episode featuring Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. For MWire, that'll be episode 20. No, that'll be episode 28 for Tooncast. For MWire, it'll be episode 21, which is A Christmas Story. We are going to be starting our Christmas films. We'll have three Christmas films for MWire in the December month. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Professor Bob K-Dog.
Saying any more words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
Guys, we suck.
Yeah, man, my grandmother played better than I do.
Well, at least you guys are still tall. I'm nothing now. Just another short guy.
You got that right. It's the only thing you got right. Who's that?
Who is that?
I don't know.
Been getting your butts kicked, haven't you?
Who's that?
It's Mike. That's Mike.
What's up?
Hey, man, what you doing here?
Don't be embarrassed. Just face it. You guys stink.
Come on, Mike. Lighten up.
Yeah, lighten up. I know, up, man. And you want your games back, huh? What little games you had to begin with?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Hard enough as it is, Mike.
Come on, give us a break.
I'm going to regret this. Stan, give me the ball.
Oh.
Ooh, look at that. Look like something from Star Trek.
Touch it.
No way, Jose.
Pat, you want your talent back? You don't have any other choice. Just touch it.
No, no, man.
Don't touch that, Pat.
Okay, you're going to walk around with a bad game for the rest of your career. Touch the ball.
Careful, Pat. I tried everything else.
Come on, Charles. Touch it. Rest you guys. Just touch it.
Oh, man. What's that?
I like that, Mike.
Hey, I caught it.
Hey, look at Muggsy handling the rock. I'm telling you.
Handle it, baby.
Handle that rock again.
That's the new Muggsy handle right there.
Yeah, get hype, man. Yeah.
Hey. Give me my powers back.
Hey, that wasn't bad.
Let me show you something. Let me see.
Back.
Oh,
you
want
to see something?
Oh,
wow.
That's good.
Thank you,
man. Thank
you, man. Got it. Yeah, baby.
Hey, Michael. Why don't you stay and play some 3-on-3 with us?
No. I don't think so.
What are you going to do? Work on that baseball swing?
Man, leave the baseball player alone, man. You know he doesn't play basketball anymore.
You know, he probably doesn't even have it anymore, guys.
Michael, do you hear that? They don't think you can play the game anymore.
There's only one way to find out.